Welcome to How to Fix It. I'm John Avlon, author, journalist, historian, recent congressional candidate. And the purpose of this podcast is to talk about finding solutions to the problems we face, not just endlessly fixating on the problems, because frankly, that doesn't do anybody any good. And joining us this week is John Hennis. He is the founder and CEO of the C Street Advisory Group. He is a lawyer, but he is also primarily known as being one of the top crisis communications and strategic advisors in business, as well as a big figure within the Democratic Party, a close and formal advisor to people like Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Eric Swalwell, and many others. And he's going to join us today to talk about how to help the Democratic brand, which is in deep, deep trouble. John Hennis, welcome to How to Fix It.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, John.
John Hennis, you focus on crisis communications and strategic advice. So let's just start here. Is the Democratic Party brand in crisis?
I think the answer is yes, on a national level. I think it's in crisis. I think that we don't have any strong leaders that are laying out the case for why the Democratic Party is important to voters. I think that we're having a really hard time figuring out how to message back against everything that we're seeing from the administration. And we really shouldn't be, because we're even seeing the administration breaking apart, right? That, you know, Musk now leaving and coming out and going after that quote unquote big, beautiful bill. So I think we have an issue there. I think the bright spot is in the states. I think we have some really strong governors who are doing what governors should do and what political leaders should be doing. And I think that they have the right message because they're focused on helping people and just getting stuff done. And so, but I do think on the national level, look around. I mean, the DNC is kind of a mess because, you know, they've got their young people fighting against the older people, you know, generational issues. We've got Schumer, you know, who, even though his entire caucus wants to, you know, vote one way, he comes in and, you know, kind of goes the other way. So yeah, there's a crisis right now. And it's a crisis because the Democratic Party doesn't know what it is. And if you don't know what you are, you can't message around it.
And you joined the Democratic Party during the Clinton era. What was that Clintonian conception of the Democratic Party that resonated with you? And do you think it works today? I remember he campaigned under the phrases opportunity, responsibility, and community. Three things, yeah. Three words.
I do. I think that Bill Clinton, and maybe he's the last one of the Democrats, really, he understood that what this country is about, right? He loved America, right? He believed, you know, he believed in people. He wanted to give people opportunity, but they have to have accountability and responsibility. So it's not opportunity, and if you have it, you're just going to succeed. You actually have to work and you have to do well. He wanted to be there to make sure that people were protected, but at the same time, he wanted to make sure that they were giving back to society. He focused on the economy. So, and he spoke in a way that people understood what he was telling them. And he was able to do it in a way where even when Republicans went after him, and obviously went after him in many, many ways, right? He was able to overcome that because he never stopped actually fighting for Americans, right? Despite all the issues that he was having, he always focused on them. And I want to say one thing about Bill Clinton, and because something really important. I was with him at a small lunch, and it was right after October 7th. And he said he had been at a meeting for the like Clinton Foundation's college part, and there were all these kids, students, and they wouldn't let him speak because they were all, you know, protesting what was happening. And he finally got up and he said, okay, listen, tell me who your leader is. I'm going to give him or her 30 minutes to talk. Then you're going to listen to me for 30 minutes. And he said he gave the history of the Middle East. He gave the history of when he was there. And he said when he finished, he goes, you know, I didn't convince everybody that about like the history and that I was right. But I did get a lot of people. And what it tells you is we need to find a way to talk to each other. And I think that Bill Clinton had that ability. He had that ability to walk into a room with people who may disagree with him. And when they walked out, they were like, you know what? This is the guy who's smart, cares about the country. I may not agree with every policy decision, but I know that he's really thinking these issues through. And I think we need to find a way back to that. And it's why I go to the governors, because they are getting stuff done. And I feel like on the national side, there's very few that are breaking through, because they're all kind of, you don't know, they don't stand together.
I do think there's a generation of governors, and you alluded to this, Wes Moore in particular, but also Josh Shapiro, Gretchen Whitmer, and others, Andy Beshear, who could be that face of change. And historically, presidential candidates have come from governor's mansions, not the Senate. That's probably a good thing from executive experience. But let's talk about identity politics. DEI has been turned into a weapon, right? Where places that were trying to address discrimination and structural discrimination are now being targeted and alienated. But I don't know that the Democratic coalition behind closed doors has a hard time dealing with the fact that the identity politics, among other things, doesn't work. At least election results would suggest that. It Yep. doesn't work. And so how do you make sure the Democratic Party is built on a foundation of the essential diversity of America while also ditching the identity politics? Some people think those two things are not just intention, but are contradiction. I think you can square the circle, but tell me what you think.
Yeah, no, I think you can square the circle too. I'm going to go back in time for a second. We have similar, I think, stories. I don't think we've really gone into them, but, you know, your family, right? Greek immigrants, right? My family, Jewish, Eastern European immigrants. My family left, you know, Russia and Poland because of the pogroms, right? Fleeing anti-Semitism to come to this country. And why did they do that? They came to this country because you had the Constitution, you had the rule of law, you had freedom. So they didn't escape anti-Semitism. There was anti-Semitism here. But what they got was they were protected. They were protected by all of these rights that we have in this country. They didn't give up their culture. They didn't give up their religion. They didn't give up their traditions. They did those things. But they also became Americans. So, and it wasn't Jewish Americans. It was Americans. And when they got jobs, they said, we're just going to work hard. We want to get our kids educated, right? We believe in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, right? We believe in the Constitution. We're going to fight for our country. All of those things, as we've seen other groups come to this country or who have been in this country, what I think happened with DEI is it went from something really critically important, which is we want diversity. We want people to be inclusive. We want to give opportunities to all, because what we want are people to work hard, do well for the country. I think what ended up happening was people hijacked that, right, and made it about identity. And so instead of being inclusive, it started to become exclusive, right? You started to have, within companies you saw, you started to have groups of people separated as opposed to bringing them together. And I think there also, I do believe on the left, on the far left, there is this almost, and I don't want to call it hatred of America because I don't think that's fair, but
no.
It might be, but it is this, we don't necessarily love what America used to stand for. And I think the Democrats need to say, we are here for all people, which I think is true, by the way. I think one of the things that Democrats truly believe in is helping those who need help, right? And to provide them with opportunity. But I do think the American way is that you provide that opportunity and then people have to take advantage of that opportunity by working hard and doing well, not by handouts and not by because who they are. I think what you're seeing, like with the Hispanic community, and moving right, or the Black community moving right, is people are saying, you know, we're being told what we need to think by the Democrats, and we can be canceled or we can be told we're one thing or another, when what we really want to do is we want a good job. We want to work hard. We want our kids to be safe. We want our kids to get a good education. We don't want them to be taught ideology. We want them to be able to speak out without worrying about that they say the wrong thing and, you know, that ruins their life in some way, or that, you know, they get in trouble at school. And I think that Democrats need to understand that and bring it back. And, you know, we've seen that coming out of October 7th. We've seen that in so many different ways. And again, because I don't think the Democrats right now have a foundation, I think it's just a lot of different people with a lot of ideas. We don't have a real way to fight back at the moment.
And look, that'll change, but I think you're seizing on something important. First of all, there is a sense that the Democratic Party became so committed to tolerance that it became intolerant.
Yes.
Right.
Great. You said it so much better than I did.
No. That it's that it was illiberal, the impulse to cancel or to judge people as members of groups first. And that I do think is at the heart of a lot of why people kick back at the Democratic brand. I don't think it has anything to do, to your point, with the reality of what people believe, particularly, say you got your Trump or, your Trump supporting friend who you think probably would have had 95% agreement with Cory Booker or Kamala Harris on the border, allegedly his number one issue, if you talked about it. But yes, politics is perception. This is a challenge that I think we all need to really embrace. What are the three words the Democratic Party can stand for right now? Now, unfortunately, right now, the Republican Party could be stand for one word, which is Trump. But in the past, people would say, okay, I'm a Republican because I support low taxes, a strong defense, and traditional values, right? That would be, the three things that formed that coalition. Hakeem Jeffries sometimes talked about the importance of reclaiming the four Fs: freedom, the flag, faith, family. But I do think that until we can answer that question, the Democrats are going to be adrift. And that's what this time is partially for. For me, it's freedom, democracy, opportunity. But as a matter of policy, what you just laid out and saying, it's public safety, economic security. Like, those two things are key. And right now, Democrats are not seen as being on the side of public safety, I think unfairly, or, inaccurately. And a lot of folks, in the middle class squeeze feel the Democratic Party's not looking out for them. And that's gotta get fixed. What are your three things?
Yeah. Well, so look, I think because of the world we're living in at this moment, democracy is there. It's unfortunate because that should be a given, right? I mean, we live in America. We shouldn't be worried about democracy. We shouldn't be worried about the rule of law. Right. Those are just things that we should all be standing for, regardless of party. That should be as nonpartisan as you come. I think that what I think about is I think about you this morning. You woke up, right? What were you thinking when you woke up? You wanted to go make sure your kids are okay. You want to get them off to school, right? You wanted to come here to do your podcast because this is an opportunity, and you're doing something important to get the word out and to build knowledge, right? You're looking at, making money and earning money for your family, right? These are the things that people care about every day, right? That's really what we care about. So to me, that's what you want to see. And when I think about, we talked about the governors, you take the governors, right? And obviously, everybody's a different type of politician, but if you take a Josh Shapiro or you take a Westmore or an Andy Beshear or a Pritzker, like every day they wake up and say, I need to make sure that my constituents in this state, their lives are better today than they were yesterday. And that means I need to put the right policies in place. That means I've got to talk and make sure that there's public safety. It means I need to cross the aisle and make sure I'm getting deals done with my Republican colleagues, because otherwise we can't get anything done. And there's true accountability there on that side. So to me, I love the words you said, democracy, freedom, right? Opportunity. Those are so critical. But democracy and freedom, to me, like, we've got to make that a given. To me, it's opportunity, it's jobs, it's good education.
Let's actually return to your clinical advice for the Democratic Party. And I want to talk about also about the schism in the party. And you talk about the importance of a great debate, civil, constructive debate, sort of hash things out. But we're not having that. In New York City right now, the Andrew Cuomo, former governor, is surging. Is in pole position, but a 33-year-old member of the DSA named Zoran Mandani has just gotten the endorsement of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, avatar of the rising left. Mm-hmm. Has distinguished herself as a real leader of that wing of the party, like Bernie Sanders. How do you see? Because people are turning out for Bernie Sanders and AOC. There needs to be more strength in the center, it seems to me. But how do you have a constructive debate within a party when associations with the far left are so destructive, sure, to the Democratic brand in many people's eyes?
Yeah, well, I think it is. It's destructive and it's scary in a number of ways. Now, I mean, there's a lot to unpack in what you just said. So if you take
too big a
question. It's good. If you take the mayor's race, for instance, right? we're a city. You need to, right? So the mayor needs to govern that city. We need to make sure, like, the things again, what matters. We want the garbage picked up. We want, when there's a snowstorm, we want, you know, the snow removed, right? We want public safety. Like, those are the things that we care about. And I think when you look at the far left, it's not about that. It, I mean, the DSA is, I mean, it's a socialist organization, right? And so, number one, that's what they believe in. It's not the country that we live in every day. Number two, because of anti-Semitism, because of October 7th, the far left has stoked that. We're seeing now that a lot of the chants, you know, from the river to the sea, and, you know, global intifada is leading now to actual violence against Jews, right? That's a destructive force within our party, okay? And that's one. Number two, though, and
we
I
should
think
say not just is, in the Democratic Party, but it is part of that.
I mean,
I'm always stunned that the toleration of any Semitic figures, I mean, associated with the alt-right. But yes, we can't ignore that big an issue.
No, we can't. But here's what I think on that, because I 1,000% agree. Anti-Semitism anywhere by any side is it needs to be stomped down, and it's completely wrong and terrible. The right, we all knew, right? Like, the far right, the extreme right, the anti-Semites, the KKK, the white supremacy, we knew those people were out there. And truthfully, up until Trump, they were marginalized, right? And we knew about them. I think after October 7th, a lot of the Jewish community, and I think a lot of members not of the Jewish community, were surprised by the hatred for Israel and the support, really, of Hamas in a lot of ways by the far left. It surprised me. Now, a lot of my friends would tell me it didn't surprise them. They saw it all along, and they might be right because they were saying things to me prior to October 7th. But I do think that the surprise of it, that is really sticking with people, where, you know, the right wings, the white nationalist groups are still seen as fringe, even if they're not. And I think that's another point we should come back to, because I think a lot of it's in the White House. But I think that, to the other point, this country is in the center, right? I think that if you look at the country as a whole, it's in the center. The two-party system makes it hard, right? Because we see it in the primaries, and we see how, you know, then you've got these fights. But so you take an Andrew Cuomo, right? And without getting into all different issues and everything else, I mean, he's a centrist at heart, right? And he's a guy that does get shit done. And he's got a lot of people that may not like him for a lot of different reasons, but you know he's going to run something well, okay? I think that we have a lot of those people in the center, both in Democrat and Republicans. And if we just had kind of like one big open primary and just said free for all, everybody can get in, I think you'd have a centrist candidate. But it pushes us. And I think, again, for the Democratic Party, and this is where my frustration with the left comes in. I know what they believe, right? But a lot of what they believe is not so different from others, right? Like, they believe in opportunity, but they push things so far that it actually scares people away and gets them to go vote for the other guys, right? And if we really want a Democratic Party to win and to start to govern the country, govern in states, we've got to find a way to have that foundation again of what does a Democratic Party stand for. And right now, like we started out, I don't know what that is.
So you were very close to Kamala Harris, and I want to make sure we hit this. I mean, you had been a supporter of hers and an advisor to hers when she was vice president, when a lot of people weren't looking to her for leadership. And you're someone who really believed in her character and her future. You know, hindsight's 20/20. But now we really do have a lot of the data. What lessons did you take from her loss? And what lessons do you think she's taken from her loss?
Yeah, well, I don't necessarily want to speak for the former vice president, but I will say some things. You know, the Kamala Harris that I know and got to know incredibly well is this incredibly smart, focused, driven person who really is pro business, really is, you know, is about inclusiveness and wants to hear lots of sides, but both, like, she's happy to hear the left and the right. and she wanted what was best for this country. And I think if she had won, she would be a very strong leader today. I think some of the things that hurt her, one, she's really loyal. Okay. Like, she is somebody who cares about people close to her. Joe Biden made her the vice president, right? When she became the nominee, right? If I didn't say anything of this to her, but if I had, I would have said, break away from him on immigration right away. Right out of the gate, you should be saying, Joe messed up on immigration. He left the border open. He did. It's a fact, okay? And he shouldn't have. And she should have been able to say, if I were the president, right, which I wasn't, I didn't have any say over the border. I know everybody likes to call me the border czar, but I would have shut the border, and I would have, you know, and then we would have worked on an immigration plan with the Republicans to get to something bipartisan. She should have broken away from Biden on a lot of those issues. She's loyal. There was a lot of pressure, a lot of people in the room. It was fast, 107 days. Second, I do think where Democrats, you know, when you go to, I would have pushed her to get out of the Democratic comfort zone, I'll call it. You know, the rallies where you have the people there who already love you, and they're important because you want to get excitement. But you know what? Go talk to Joe Rogan, right? Talk to his people. I mean, that's a ton of this country. You need to tell them why they should vote for you as well, right? She probably should have done some more interviews, right, than she did, right? And really gotten out there for people to get to know her. Because I think that, you know, it, again, it's the media marketplace. It's going to, if you're a little bit on the right, right, and if you don't think you're a Kamala Harris fan, then the algorithms are going to push you more and more. And so what you're going to see is the memes, and you're going to hear all the bad things. You're not going to actually hear from her, and you're not watching her rallies. You're not sitting in a room with her. So all of a sudden it becomes you're getting false information and disinformation a lot of the time. So I think you have to get out of your comfort zone. So for instance, you know, I know you would do this. I see Swalwell doing this, right? Corey's starting to do this. Obviously, you know, Gavin Newsom is trying to do this. Getting out of your comfort zone and talking to people who you disagree with, right? Learning from them, hearing it. Like, why have we lost the working class, right, as Democrats, right? And I think we've lost them for a long time, but it's because we forgot about them. They don't feel heard. They don't feel like we care about them. We need to bring all of that back. So I think for Kamala, you know, I think that she could have brought a lot of other people around her with different views, and she probably could have honed a lot of her views. But I think it's a little bit unfair for me to even say that. She had 107 days to sure. jump in and run a campaign. And I think in those 107 days, she did an amazing job. And I know everybody talks about the election, but at the end of the day, she lost by 210,000 votes in three states. And, you know, if she had longer, who knows what would have happened.
It's applied history in this case, albeit however recent. What do we learn? What useful wisdom can we learn? Because on some level, of course, you think that Donald Trump, having tried to overturn an election, presided over a pandemic that killed over a million Americans, on those two bases alone, would have had a hard time cobbling together a majority. But he did. And I do think that there's a reckoning Democrats need to have for why folks felt that he was an acceptable alternative at the time, even as I think he's doing enormous damage, and there will be a pendulum swing.
But let's talk about that for 1 second, John. Sorry. Think about this, because again, Democrats, right? Joe Biden, right? I personally think that Biden ended up being so destructive to us, because the thing, you know, the fact that, you know, he was losing it, and he did have people around him who were protecting him, and he still was going to run. The fact that, you know, he went out and pardoned everybody in his family and everything else, and even though he said he wouldn't do that, there's things that he did, and the way that he did them, that allows people who support Trump to say, what's really the difference? Now, you and I can sit there and obviously, don't get me wrong, we can sit there and
I hear
say,
you on that.
Yeah. Obviously,
I disagree, but I hear you on that.
Yeah. No, by the way, so do I. But but what I'm saying now, I think, is one of the problems in the Democratic Party. It's I sit there and I see all these people that I talk to that I'm friendly with who will say to me, but he did either the same thing or something similar. And I can debate them until the end of the earth and they're not going to listen. Or I can say, why are they saying that? And part of what they're saying is, you know what? You got a guy who clearly shouldn't have continued to run for president, right? clearly there were people hiding things from the American public. We saw him come out on that debate stage, right? We saw what he cared, like obviously cares about his kid, but he could have, if he had come out, let's just take Hunter, okay, just my view. If he had come out and said, hey, listen, you know what? I'm the president of the United States. As the president of the United States, that gives me a lot of privileges nobody else has. One of the privileges is I can protect my son. What dad out there would not protect his son if he had the chance to do it? I'm going to do it. Okay. Be as upset with me as you want. I'm doing it. But he didn't do that. Right. Instead, he tried to make it a whole thing, kangaroo court. And it's like, okay, kangaroo court of a jury of his peers who found him guilty. So now you're just talking like Donald Trump talks. Right.
Yeah. And then it creates a false equivalence.
Exactly.
It does. All right. So look, I want to end where we began. You are a strategic crisis communications guy. You are a strategic advisor. Let's just distill your top line advice for the Democratic Party right now on how to right their ship and win.
Sure. We need to focus on what people truly care about. Okay. And to me, it's when you wake up in the morning, every single person out there cares about the same thing. They want to be able to wake up. They want to be able to put food on their table. They want to be safe when they walk on their streets. If you have kids, you want to make sure kids are safe and getting a good education. And we have to keep hammering that home that that's who we are. That's what we do. And then the policies that we put out have to follow that. All the rest is kind of, it doesn't matter, right? People may get fixated on one thing or another, but at the end of the day, they're going to vote for the people who are actually going to care for them and help them. That's what they want. And so as a Democratic Party, I think that we need to do a deep dive. We have to figure out, you know, who our leader is going to be. That's obviously going to take time. And we need to really tell the people of this country what we're going to do for them. In addition, now we can't get distracted. I'll tell you something I probably shouldn't call him out, but I told Cory Booker this, and this was not about Cory, because I think that Cory is a great communicator. I said, here's what the difference between Donald Trump and the Democrats. Okay. Donald Trump is playing golf. Okay. He hits the ball into the sand trap. What does he do? He picks the ball up, puts it on the, you know, puts it back on the fairway, hits it again, doesn't even count the shot, pretends it never happened and moves on. Okay. Democrats hit the ball into the sand trap. They go and they just start hitting it. They can't get it out of the trap, digging a deeper and deeper hole for them. Right. And you can look at all the identity issues. That's what they do. They've got to stop doing that. Right. It's got to be, let's just simplify things. Right. If you think about anything, right. Messaging is about telling, is it communicating well, is just making it simple, right? Like, why make it complicated? When you look back, my first kind of foray or passion into politics was with Bill Clinton. I was coming out of college. I was listening to him. You know, I was like, this guy is speaking to me. No politician had ever spoken to me before. But why? Because it was simple, right? He felt people's pain. I saw that he had empathy for people. It was the economy, stupid, right? That, of course it is, right? That leads to everything. He reached across the aisle to get stuff done, or he was smarter than the other side and actually, you know, found ways to triangulate and get them to do what he needed them to do. And he made the country better. That's what Democrats need to go back to. And if we continue to have this infighting in the Democratic Party and this identity fighting, then I think we're going to lose a lot more elections.
John Hennis, thanks for joining us on How to Fix It.